Good evening and welcome to Wednesday's Late Debate. Joining us tonight, we have Fergus O'Dowd, Fine Gael TD for Louth, Breed Smith, People Before Profit TD for Dublin South Central, Thomas Pringle, Independent TD for Donegal, Rebecca Moynihan, Labour Party Senator and Spokesperson on Housing, and journalist and commentator Alison O'Connor. We want to hear from you, so do please get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebate_RTE. Now, one day on from raising the curtain on Housing Minister Dara O'Brien's new plan to deal with the housing crisis, the reviews are in and they ain't pretty. They are drowning in the shadows of Fine Gael housing policy, says Fianna Fáil backbencher John Lahart. He should stand up to cuckoo funds, advises the Independent. The evidence doesn't support his shared equity scheme, says the Irish Times. And woohoo, says Mary Lou MacDonald, but she was being sarcastic. Fergus, you were, this obviously featured largely at the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party meeting this evening. You were one of a large number of people at that meeting who expressed concerns.
Of course, I think we're in a hugely damaging crisis. We're in a very difficult crisis in terms of housing. Young families can't get homes. It's, you know, years ago, 10, 15 years ago, you were 25 when you got your first house. Now you'll be lucky if you're 35 by the time you get it. And I think the main view at the meeting was that we need to deal with this extremely efficiently and effectively, that we're in, that just like we're dealing with COVID, we need to put all our resources into sorting this problem out.
Were you not putting all your resources to sorting this problem out when you were in government for the
last... We were, of course. But what I'm saying is that where we are now, and what we've got to look to the future to make sure that, that the changes that are coming, the Land Development Agency, the fact that they're doubling the number of homes that you can get from any developer. If a developer builds 100 homes, at the moment, 10 of those go for social housing. When this legislation has gone through, that will be 20 out of the 100 between social and affordable housing. For the first time ever, there will be, or certainly that I can remember, there will be direct build by local authorities on their own land of affordable housing. And notwithstanding the criticisms, the fact that you can get the Help to Buy scheme of 30,000 plus the shared capacity for the state to take an equity in your home, I think that's very helpful too. And notwithstanding the criticism...
So what did you say at the meeting?
Well, what I said was that, if you want to know the full truth, I said that we need to do this radically. We need to move into different ground, ground that I've fought for and argued for before now. In Louth County Council, they used compulsory purchase orders to buy homes that were closed up in the county at an average cost of restoring cost of 100,000 per home. They were able to put upwards of 100 homes back into family use, that we need to look at abandoned homes. We need to have a tax on empty homes.
You see, people will hear you. I appreciate you.
I've articulated this before.
But you are a Fine Gael TD.
I am, of course, yes.
There has been a Fine Gael minister
in that
portfolio up until quite recently.
Yes.
And I don't know how many people from your party have sat at that desk here over the last number of years.
Sure.
And I would always ask the same question. Is there any moment where you think back and think maybe this housing policy that we are so wedded to isn't working for us? Do we need to rethink this? And every time I'm told, time is all we need here. We have it. We have the policy together and time is all we need. Are we now acknowledging that actually that policy, was not going to deliver,
the policy
not get us
that
out
is
of this
there
hole.
Isn't going far enough. It is working. And in fact, before COVID, we were getting up to 20,000 homes per year. That would have been 25 last year and 30 this year. It'll be half that number now. That is a fact. But it's also a fact that the Land Development Agency has been set up and all these other changes are coming. But we need to do more.
Okay. Well, Thomas, I'll let you in first. Yeah.
This is amazing, dear. And I know Fergus personally, maybe feels that this isn't the right policy. But the reality is that the party that he's a member of, this
of
is their policy. This
it.
Is their government policy. And and it has never worked. It works for the developers and it works for the vulture funds. That's the people they wanted to work for. So I think this policy has been very effective because Fine Gael have made it work for the people that they wanted to work for. They don't want it to work for the individuals that are in need of housing. And that is the problem that we have with this policy. And that's why this policy is being continuously pursued by every single government for the last number of years.
Breed.
Well, I think you're going to hear more contrite Fergus O'Dowds in the seat opposite you as the week progresses, Katie, because what they've managed to do with this bill overnight is to create a new cohort, a very important cohort for the base of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, of slightly better off white collar workers up and down the country who are hopping mad over this, that you could say that an affordable house is 450,000. Now, that works out as probably affordable for two TDs, married and living together and shared in their income. But there's two TDs are not your average nurses, teachers, Gardaí, you know, paramedics, people who need the homes, who are having to move back home with mammy and daddy in their late 30s and 40s and stay there because every time they reach out to try and buy something, it goes further and further away from them. And it must be a terrible shock to them to see this great announcement, as Mary Lou MacDonald said, Yahoo, over affordable homes are going to be built and they'll be affordable at 450,000. I mean, give us a break. What planet are they on? And this is why I think Fergus is so controlled tonight, why so many Fine Gael TDs are going to be contrite and will try and remove themselves slightly from this policy because it is a Fianna Fáil minister.
Oh, yeah,
but
well,
my God, they've set the ground for it. Over the years through Owen Murphy and before that with Alan Kelly in government with them, they have set the ground, they have set the pace for it.
I've always held my views, I've expressed them for years. They haven't always been listened to. I've stood for Fine Gael. I just want to make the point. I've stood for Fine Gael five times. I've been elected five times to the Dáil. Everybody knows
who I am.
But
you have defended housing, Fine Gael's housing
policy. Of course
policy
I do. I have no issue with that.
Consistently through that
but what
period.
I'm talking about is the future. I'm talking about the young people now that can't get their homes.
But is that
the future come around? Very good.
Let me bring in, I want to bring in Rebecca Moynihan. Rebecca is on the line with us tonight. You're welcome, Rebecca. You came up with a novel response to Dara O'Brien today.
Well, I had asked Dara O'Brien about this about 2 weeks ago when he came to the Housing Committee if he was looking at reintroducing his bill, which in October 2019, he introduced a bill that said 30% of housing developments would be reserved for first-time buyers. Now, we saw the issue that happened in Mullen Park and Maynooth last week. The same Roundhill Capital also bought up an estate in Dublin 15 where they're charging rents of over €2,000. And I'm essentially saying the minister needs to now put his money where his mouth is. He said one thing in opposition. He's been minister for 8 months now. He could do this through the Affordable Housing Bill or the Land Development Agency Bill. It will be a small amendment based on what he had proposed and said if he doesn't do it, the Labour Party will put forward the bill that he put on word for word to try and force him into a position of ensuring that institutional investors can't dominate the housing market. And as well as buying whole estates, we're here in situations of people who are going to go into an estate agent, going to put their house in the market and being ordered over the asking price by institutional investors and buying them up. And people who are trying to buy and afford a home can't compete with that, even in a very high market.
Even at that, if that legislation were to be introduced and 30% of new developments were, you know, ring fenced for first time buyers, that would still leave 70% of developments at the mercy of whoever had the money. And it seems the people who have the money now are these funds.
Well, I think the funds shouldn't be.
I'll just let Rebecca finish that and I'll let you in.
Absolutely, and I have criticisms of the bill. And for example, if you're trying to build mixed income, mixed communities, mixed tenure communities, he also exempted things like build to rent in Dara O'Brien's initial bill. So I have criticisms of the bill. But what I am saying is this is a way of trying to force and get the minister to act and act in government what he said in opposition.
What about what, Fergus, can I put you, what Leo Varadkar, what your party leader, we believe, told you this evening, has said publicly before, and indeed Pascal Dunne said it earlier today on News Talk, I think he was speaking on, that we need these, we can't frighten off these funds.
Well, I think
need to be careful here because a lot of the houses, in particular apartments in Dublin, may never have been built.
The number
were
of apartments
it not for this
went
money.
Up
so from, do you agree
yeah.
with that?
No, they went up from, I think, in 2016, the number of apartments built in was 1,400. And I think last year was something like 4,600. I don't have a problem with people investing in housing and building them. But
should they be able to do it tax-free?
I have a problem with them buying them. I think the difference is we need investment to build our homes, but they should not be able to purchase homes, which should be family homes or first-time buyers in particular. And whatever
mechanism
is found... So we're
going to ask these funds to put money into developments and then not...
No, but they sell the houses or whatever. But what I'm saying is that they don't buy the houses that have been built.
You want your cake and eat it then.
The whole government policy
you can't say Company A builds 50 houses and 50 people come along and buy them. That's what happens at the moment, and that's what should continue. I don't think that commercial or financial companies should be able to come in and buy homes that they didn't build, obviously, and that they're going to rent. I think that's immoral and it's wrong.
Well, then you should have done something about it up to now, because they're called after birds, they're vultures, they're cuckoos, and they are everywhere.
Yep.
And they are cleaning up in profits, and they pay very little, if any, tax on them. Yep. And this has been structured by all governments for the last decade to invite in the so-called investors who just gobble up the property, and property is no longer seen as housing is supposed to be about a home. It's supposed to be about investment. And this has been deliberate government policy for years now.
The investment
and
in
Fergus, it's a bit too late now to be shouting about unless you're prepared to do something about it.
I've been consistent in everything I've always
putting the
said.
Word affordable in front of housing doesn't make it affordable.
I haven't changed at all. I'm making the same points as I always made.
But then,
and the point is very clear, and the point is very strong at our party, that must not be allowed to continue.
I'm afraid you're not going to get away with that. Your party's been in power for too long to get away with that.
Yeah. Thomas, I'll let you back in there.
Look, I mean, Fergus comes in here and personally says his personal opinion is this, and that's fair enough. But the reality is that his party opinion is completely different, and his party opinion is to pursue vulture funds to buy up houses, and that's what they want to do, and that's what they've been pursuing for years, Fergus. No. You can say
that
your own personal
tonight.
Opinion is against that,
the
but your party's opinion
tonight.
Is in
you should
favour
read
of that.
Their words, what they said today.
Well, like, I don't care
they
what the Taoiseach says, because
acceptable.
His actions are completely different.
No,
We understand that Pascal Donoghue met Darragh O'Brien today to discuss this issue of investment funds and their engagement in the market here. Was there any indication of what came from that meeting today?
Well, the Minister of Finance did actually say at our meeting tonight that this was a serious issue and it would be addressed. We also agreed as a party, we'd asked this previously, that Darragh would be coming into our parliamentary party probably later this month to talk about all these issues. We also said... Well, I'm only telling
you'd be a brave man in that room, given that we heard this evening that they're gunning for him in Fine Gael.
I don't. Well, I mean, look, Darragh's well able to fire back if he's shot at. I think the point is that there is a debate, there is a changed atmosphere, there's no doubt about that, and I think there's an increased... I'm talking about in the country.
How is it only now, can you answer me this? And I know that we have been very focused on COVID for obvious reasons for the last year. But it's like, almost like everyone woke up 2 days ago and the scales fell from our eyes.
Yes.
And the idea that there was funds in the marketplace who paid no tax on their rent roll, who paid no capital gains tax, who was able to get money at incredibly cheap prices in the international markets, and that having them in the market here was not going to distort the situation.
Well,
when did we realise that this might be a problem?
Well, probably...
That Fine Gael facilitated it as well in coming here.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I'm not being cynical...
I'm being factual.
Well, okay, well, let's be practical. Let's all agree that this shouldn't happen. And let's make sure that we make sure, and I'll make sure in my part that it will not continue.
Should the tax arrangements for these funds and these REITs, should they be changed, in your view?
Of course they should be changed,
Does Pascal Donoghue agree with you, do you think?
Well, Pascal didn't disclose his full ministerial views tonight. But he spoke about it and he said that he would be seriously looking at it. I repeat, the Taoiseach just said, Leo Radic said it was unacceptable. The Taoiseach in the Dáil said it was unacceptable. And I think if we all
work... It still happens.
Pardon?
Casey, it did happen, but we have to make sure it doesn't happen again.
I'm as angry as you are.
Okay, let Rebecca in here because she's at a disadvantage not being in the room. Rebecca, come in there.
Can I come in here now? So the Affordable Housing Bill was published just yesterday and as part of that, it's called rental, which was welcomed across the board politically. Last week, I put an amendment into the report coming from the Housing Committee that in cost rental accommodation, it would be somewhat tied to affordability, which most of the experts said is about 30% of net income. The government TDs combined to vote that down. And then we heard on Friday that Dara O'Brien was thinking about letting for-profit investors come in to the cost rental market. So, like, it's not just an issue of investors buying up whole housing estates. Government policy is being, like, at the moment, a bill that hasn't gone through is being designed essentially to incentivize investors to come in to what people thought of was cost rental, but is actually just going to be for-profit rental. And I think if Fergus wants to do anything about it, I think that is certainly something that government TDs who are unhappy about it on the backbenches, before the bill is passed, the Affordable Housing Bill is that cost rental should be linked to affordability and it shouldn't be allowed to be for profit, which
it's based on your income. It's based to get on the cost rental, as I understand it, and I know the detail isn't there, I think it'll be Friday, is that you must be earning less than the average wage.
No, but it's the opposite side of that, because
it's
the point.
It's based on your affordability.
No, but at the point,
it's based on lack of affordability.
But how can you invite investors into a project that's supposed to be not a generator of profit?
I think the shared equity will be a mechanism, for want of a better word, between the state and banks where they will.
Oh no, that's
meet
a separate
money.
Matter. I think Rebecca's talking about the cost rental model. The cost rental model that has been touted for a long time now as
is that the houses are built and that the charge that you pay is to pay the actual cost and the maintenance.
Then where would investors have a role in that?
I haven't got the full detail on that.
I want to bring in Alison O'Connor because you've been waiting very patiently there in another studio down the hall from us, Alison. This is extraordinary, the way this has blown up in the last number of days.
It is and it isn't, I suppose, in that it really has distilled last year's general election campaign and the subsequent result in terms of the success of Sinn Féin and how people believed that Fine Gael in particular. I mean, I don't think you would have to wonder, would Owen Murphy be resigning from politics had he been anything other than Minister for Housing in the last administration? And I mean, I'm listening to Fergus there, and he is sounding like a martyr to the old housing. There's no doubt about it.
Someone to want to build them, not to be a martyr.
But I mean, Fergus, you just cannot ignore your personal feelings aside, that your party has been in government for so long.
I accept that.
The problem here is that you're looking at this this new legislation that has been approved by the Cabinet, and you're thinking, has this instilled confidence in the general public that our housing situation is going to improve? And I think that's a resounding no.
I don't agree.
The other difficulty is that it's going to take quite a while before people will know whether or not it is successful. And the more deep-rooted problem is that for the last 10 years, people have been hearing that this next plan is going to be the one that is going to sort everything out. And I mean, I find it really difficult to see how this issue of these funds buying up entire estates and being able to do so, how that corner wasn't seen around. You know, it was an excellent story by the Business Post, but how somebody in government or all the at this stage, my God, how that wasn't seen somehow in advance and something, you know, to be done about it. And I mean, this whole idea of this handbags between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael now, you know, at their parliamentary party meetings is a bit of a joke. I mean,
especially on
the part of Fine Gael, having had that portfolio for so long and having been accused, I suppose, for so long of being ideological on the issue. And you see where Donal Hart was saying, I think, that one of the things that came up at the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party meeting, as I understand it, is that it should be limited to one, you know, somebody being able to buy one unit. And that it was said that that Fine Gael would never allow this, you know, on the grounds of their philosophy this whole issue, that they wouldn't support that level of market intervention.
In fairness, you can't say that Fine Gael would have that view, because because we've never discussed that, first of all. Secondly,
by your actions, you shall be known for
it. No, but it's all very well to sit in defence and make those comments. I respect you, that's your job. But the fact is, the number of first time buyers this year is 4,700 in the first quarter. First time buyers, that's the largest number of first time buyers who got mortgages in this country since 2007. So that's you mightn't like that, but that's also the truth. So some things are working and are working well, but not well enough. And I go back to my point.
Fergus, there needs to be a serious intervention, by government in the housing market.
I agree.
And they continually refuse to do it. Yet this week,
but we're spending more money than ever before.
You're intervening this week in the market by passing a bill to stop ticket touting. Now that's direct intervention in the market. You could do that with housing and stop the whole scale privatisation of people's homes, their potential homes.
Let me give you a sense of what we're getting a massive reaction to, as we did last night as well when we discussed the housing issue. People are very, very engaged with this, as you can tell. The commodification of housing has become a national disgrace. Hardworking, decent people are being deprived of home ownership. These people want to be owners, not renters, living in a house or property they will never own. It's a disaster, says one texter. Katie Micheál Martin's government allowed vested interests to block first-time buyers from buying family homes. It's treachery at its worst, and it is incendiary for the public. It is as incendiary for the public as water charges. It can only suit Fianna Fáil's partisan and government to allow this treachery continue, says Jane in Dublin 3. What's this one? Katie, I think we need a Sunday night weekly lotto where you can win houses only. At least you have a better chance to own your own home, says Patrick in Glasnevin. That is the sense of the last...
Yes, I accept that.
Yeah. Yes.
I know that. I'm aware of that. I understand people's feelings and I understand their concerns and their worries. And that's where we, as I go back to what I said, we have to address these issues additionally, along with this legislation, in other ways, which I believe can and will be successful.
You could throw out the legislation that was just produced yesterday.
Well, it hasn't been passed yet. It hasn't been passed.
They're going to push it through very seriously.
I think the point is the legislation has been published. It's out there. Let's debate it fully. I'm all in favour of that. And I would
express
my view.
If it's as bad as it is, why would you not get rid of it and reform
the point I'm trying to make is that we all agree on a number of things here. We all agree that I agree, you agree, we all agree that these guys shouldn't be able to buy these homes. And we have to stop that.
But we
all agree that we need more state housing.
You created the setup.
You gave them the tax breaks. You welcomed them in. You encouraged them in. Okay. So now you're saying it shouldn't happen.
The history is this, that we are where we are. There was a time when this country was absolutely stone broke. We all know that. And a lot of decisions were made that I wish we never had to make, but we had to make them.
We are where we are.
That's the point.
But how did we get here?
Well, no, but I'm more interested in how we get houses for people. And I'll go back to the points I make. Can I make this point?
Maybe you support me.
But will you listen to me on this one? If Louth County Council can take over 100 houses that are derelict and abandoned, replace them and put families into them or restore them for 100,000 on average per home, can you go around your county and find 100 houses? Because I can. Breed, you can do the same. We can all do the same. The energy in local authority.
Has Louth County Council done that?
Yes, they did do it, and they did it very successfully. And I've said this should be the model in the country, and we could deliver at least another 2,000 homes in this country over the next 12 months. I have no doubt about that, and that's what we need to do. And we need to push that, and that's what I'm doing.
Okay,
and if you do that, that's one thing that will work.
Okay,
and what about empty homes that are lying there for more than a year?
Oh my God,
why don't we tax those?
This is really terrible hypocrisy. And it gets even worse because the vulture funds and the cuckoo funds that buy up the property then
we should
get
tax them if they're
and payments from the state to house people who are in need of public housing. Yeah. So we double down on promoting them, on protecting them, on giving them tax breaks, and then we use taxpayers' money to put people into housing that they should have from local authorities or that they should be able to buy.
I believe if a house is not a primary residence, or and if the person who owns it isn't in a nursing home or otherwise ill, that we should tax that.
Well, the cuckoo funds are not in nursing homes.
No, no, we've done that.
It's done in other countries, it's done in other places,
and it's working. And I think that would put quite a few houses back in the market. You know, and these are the things that we need to talk about. The question, your county, for instance,
Donegal, a lot of the houses in Donegal are affordable houses, are at 225,000 euros
in Donegal. Yeah, but what about all the holiday homes in Donegal that are empty? That are empty from the 1st of September to the 1st of April, and in West Kerry and West.
So Fingal policy is
different. No, no, no. What I'm saying is, but we need to look at the houses that are being built, and if they're being used for rental, right? Can we get families into them? Does that make sense or does it not? I have people in West Kerry that I know can't build on their own farm. And yet there are 20, 30 houses have got planning permission for commercial enterprises. And I'm sure you have them in Donegal as well.
If only Fingal were in government, you could deliver all that.
I want to put this question to you.
What ideas have you got? What have you got?
Housing for people.
Yeah, but what are you going to do about it?
Stop vulture funds from buying up whole housing estates.
Okay.
Stop vulture funds from buying up... our apartments all across Dublin and leaving them lying empty to keep the price of rent inflated so that they can benefit
more. But the vulture funds,
as
you call them, they built over 4,000 apartments in the last couple of years. I don't have a problem with them buying them up.
Okay, Rebecca.
Yeah, so Katie, that's actually a really interesting point that Thomas has made. We saw work from the Sunday Business Post that places, the Kennedy Wilson building, for example, down in Clancy Quay, it's about 4/5 empty, and then Capital Dock, it's about half empty. And we see other places are giving rents of, they'll give a discount of a year or give a discount of a month rather than bringing down rents. And there is a really, really strong case for a vacant property tax or a vacant homes tax. And we know other...
Yeah, Fergus O'Dowd is nodding to that proposal,
yeah.
Rebecca.
So we have somewhere like Barcelona, for example, they have said to large funds that if they don't rent out their house, they will take them back. They will put somebody in them for a year. Amsterdam does something similar. They work with people if there's a reason that the home is vacant. But otherwise, after a year, they bring it in and they put people in social housing within it. So there's a really strong argument for a use policy and a vacant house tax. And we already have a vacant sites levy, but the implementation of that is very patchy amongst local authorities.
Yeah, I just want to read a text I got in here from Brendan Conroy. It says, Katie, I was at a slick webinar hosted by the Land Development Agency this evening, presenting their plans for the iconic Dundrum Central Mental Hospital site. But despite repeatedly using the word affordable in relation to the majority, 50 plus one, of their planned housing, they were totally unable or unwilling to define what they meant by affordable. The new Dáil version of affordable is anything but. Like so many housing plans from the last 20 years, the Land Development Agency already looks like another lost opportunity. Like, there are concerns around. I mean, that is, we're handing over a huge swathes of of public land.
Absolutely.
Hoping that the right thing will be done with
it. I think that's a very important point. And in fact, I think the Land Development Agency have land which I think could build up to at least 60,000 homes, and I agree we need much more hands-on action with them, and I don't disagree with what you're saying there at all, but they are the key to unlocking land because they're working with state lands. And I think the one point I want to make about affordability, the figures that some of you quote are only for, they're for Dublin, I acknowledge, but if you look at places like Tipperary, Mayo, Longford, Leitrim, Waterford, Roscommon and so on, they're all under 300,000. The average... laugh if you want. The average cost of a home in this country at the moment is 270,000. That's the average cost. I accept that it's doubled that in Dublin.
How many people do you know in Donegal that could pay 270,000 for a
house? I don't know that.
Nobody.
But I do know that if you can get your 30,000 deposit, if you can, hold on a second, laugh if you want.
Cash.
And if you get your 30 or your 20% shared equity, and if you get 3.5 times your income, I don't know where that leaves you, but I do know a lot of people.
It leaves you about halfway there.
I've been speaking to people today who will take advantage of that, and they believe that that will allow them to get a house they couldn't otherwise get.
Well, I'll just tell you that
it will allow them to get a house that is much in excess of what their income is. Yeah. And it's much in excess of what the central banks allow. And again, this is the way that a policy from the government has been captured by investors. The investors and construction industry have essentially gone and said, we can only have housing for this amount of money, and you need to bridge the gap between wages and what we can build it for, rather than actually address the underlying issues of construction costs, and rather than address the underlying issues of the state should be building these houses, rather than simply relying on the private sector to provide them. And in other shared equity schemes that you see in London, for example, the government are touting this as being a supply side measure. All the experts say it's clearly not. It's a demand side measure, and it led to house price increases of 6% in London.
Now, that's contradicted by the minister, who says it was a 1% increase.
And do you believe that minister that we've just been given out about? The same minister who you're condemning.
I hear what you said, Rebecca. But what the minister is saying, just if I can make this point, 1% increase inflation and 14% increase in supply.
That's not what...
Well, that's what the minister said today. And like, I just want to make that point.
I think, Fergus, you have a slim chance of anybody believing or accepting that.
I don't expect you to believe what I say, but I'm just saying that's what he said.
In the minister,
Fergus,
so.
This is not me saying it. This is the equivalent of the Controller and Auditor General in the UK. And the 1% was based on same people, public, private, buying in the same area at the same time, right? So it wasn't looking at increases in prices overall. That's where that 1% figure comes from.
Well, Rebecca, I heard the minister and Dahl on this today, and I'd be happy to hear you to talk about this afterwards. But that's what he said.
He's selectively quoting it, and you sit down and read it.
You're selectively quoting it.
Well, I have here in my hand. Sorry, Rebecca. Report. I have here in my hand a report from the State Housing Agency, which reported to the Department of Housing last September that this scheme in the UK had resulted in a 6% increase in house prices in the Greater London area. So that's the Housing Agency. And we know that the Central Bank has again repeated...
I'm only quoting what he said.
Just to say that the Central Bank has again repeated that it has concerns. That is not, it's not that it has concerns with an old version, it has concerns with the current version of this bill that is going into the office now.
Yeah. Well, again, I haven't read those concerns, and I repeat that this debate is only starting, and it's right and proper that all these points...
Your listeners, Katie, must feel very, very frustrated listening to this discussion. And whatever the technicalities are, the reality is that we have had a developer-led market in this country and an investor-led market for the last 10 to 12 years, and people are utterly priced out of the market.
Well, I'll just give
and
you
having
one
to move
those.
Back home with their family, it's shameful. In their 30s and 40s, having to move back with Mammy and Daddy.
I'm just reading one of those here. Good grief, says one of our texters, 450,000 is affordable. I've been in college for 12 years. I have a PhD. I work in third level education. I can afford 200,000. This government needs to get a grip on what is affordable. I'm so upset about this. I don't know when I will own my own home. And when I hear that, Alison O'Connor, that sounds like somebody that Fine Gael might have looked to as, you know, one of theirs, basically, somebody that they might look to for a vote.
Absolutely, Katie. And I think it shows that, again, going back to the credibility issue, if you even look at that UK...
and Fianna Fáil.
That UK scheme, which is being discussed, is being, you know, on how much price inflation it caused. And it's a real case of the government says, oh, no, it didn't. The opposition says, oh, yes, it did. Yeah. And in this instance, you have people like Rebecca there who is putting forward a really good argument. Cian O'Callaghan for the Social Democrats doing really well on it. Ono Brin, who has always had a very good command of his brief. And that basically they're burying the government. And the government didn't have credibility in this to begin with. And the government now, after what has happened in the last couple of days with the stories of these funds going around and wholesale buying up houses, is that it brings us back to this sense that we're just always, all the time, rolling out the Cead Míle Fáilte to the money men, and that, it's all part of an inner circle. I mean, where I live in Harold's Cross, a couple of times a week I pass, there's a development in Mount Argus, and there's just one particular section of it that I pass on a walk, and I can see a row of apartments on the ground, rows of apartments on the ground floor. I don't know, they're one or two bedroom, and they're empty. Now, I am lucky enough not to have a housing need, and it makes me burn with anger every time I pass it. So I cannot imagine if you were someone like your texter, you know, who is trying to get onto the property ladder and who can't. So, I mean, it's a real, I'm thinking about this sense of even down to the Dublin Bay South by-election and maybe to have it earlier, that Fine Gael would want it a bit earlier because of a vaccine bonus. I mean, I think that in a way, the acute need here and the acute anger does sort of blow the idea of vaccine bonuses are a real pep for the government as a result of that out of the water.
I think empty homes tax is the answer there to those houses. And I said that, and I've always said that, that it should be taxed if they're not being occupied.
Okay. I think that would make sense. I think the answer there is stop the vulture funds buying up the houses. Mm. That's the answer. And look, and the reality, yeah, well, the reality is that the government's policy is working well for the people that the government wants it to work for, which is the vulture funds and the, and
well, I don't, you know, that's, I don't, I think to be the, fair, the government would want it to work for the electorate as well.
No, they don't. Why haven't they done it then?
They're spooked by it now, Tommy, because of the reaction they got to this bill, you know.
If the government policy is to work for individual people who are in need of housing, why isn't the policy doing that?
I think the point is, I think the key point here, and we all agree.
The key point is that you're not doing it.
No, we're right in this much. We all have to change what's happening. And I'm committed to changing that, and so are you. So let's change it. I'll do it as best I can.
Do you think Dara O'Brien is committed to change?
I haven't spoken to him about housing, but I will be speaking to him, obviously. I don't see why he wouldn't be, because he's aware in his own constituency.
But he's committed to this policy, but I'm saying, do you think he's returning it all on?
Look, everybody wants this change, and it's coming. So I want to do it. I know how it should be done. People would disagree with me, but I think this is what has to happen.
In my short time as a TD, I'm probably not as long-serving TD as the other two here with me, or Rebecca's a senator, I know that, but in that short period of time, every time the government feel the heat from below, they put this argument, we're all in this together. It's not that long ago when I remember senior members of Fine Gael being totally against repeal the 8. They felt the pressure from below, and all of a sudden we were all yes together, we were all in together. The same was true of the campaign for same-sex marriage. And then when it came to the water charges and they were really scared about what might happen, they had to change their tack when we all got into this together. So when I hear you saying we're all in this together, I know you're worried. And it's not me you're worried about,
worried at all.
It's your voters.
I'm worried about your voters because they are raging with you. What you're doing to the future of housing in this country is absolutely and utterly shameful.
And what you'll end up with is social problem is where people who are renting for most of their lives, when they turn 60, 65 and retire, they're at risk of homelessness, of a serious homeless crisis for the next generation. And that's a very, very dangerous thing to have on your conscience.
On that, we will leave that one there, because we could actually spend the next 3 hours, I think, talking about all the various aspects of this. And we will come back to this again and again and again, Fergus, I'm sure. But for now, we'll take a break and we'll talk about vaccines after these.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. And we have said goodbye and thank you to Rebecca Boynton, who is leaving us after that housing discussion. But in studio, we're going to stick with the vaccines story now, because it was reported today that healthcare staff who refuse to be vaccinated face redeployment under proposals being examined by the HSE. Staff who refuse to get the jab could be moved away from patient-facing roles. Patients are entitled to ask about the vaccination status of a healthcare worker, but those workers are not obliged to disclose this personal medical information. What do we think about this, Breed?
Well, I'd say there's probably a very small minority of people who are refusing the vaccines, particularly in healthcare, because they have an understanding of how healthcare works. I think they should be encouraged to take the vaccinations. If they're working on the front line with people, then I don't think it's fair for them to continue dealing directly with people unless they're willing to socially distance and mask up and wear the PPEs on a permanent basis. But I really do think we should encourage them to take the I don't think we should penalise them for refusing to take the vaccination, because if it happens in the health service, it could happen elsewhere. And I don't think that's the correct way to approach this. We need to bring people with us, and we can do that. We can do it if we take the proper approach.
So you think it's okay to have people who could be exposed to people who are not vaccinated in a healthcare setting?
I don't think they should be exposed. I think they need to protect themselves like we're having to do now if they're not willing to take the vaccine. Or they should be accommodated in jobs where they're not dealing directly with
human
beings.
Well, I think that is the plan,
beings.
Isn't it? That they would be taken away from maybe patient-facing roles. But even at that, it would be... Would it be an infringement on workers' rights?
I think the first thing I'd like to say is that 18 healthcare workers have lost their lives due to COVID. And I think
more than that.
No, 18 is the figure that was in the paper today that I saw.
If
it is more, I regret all of those deaths like you do. So I think the point is that the emphasis is on the work that they do and the commitment and the sacrifices they've made for us. So I would agree with you, Bree, that we should encourage them. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, if somebody is being exposed unnecessarily to a virus, that's not acceptable either. You know, and I think that is the issue. But I think...
You'd have no objection to the idea of healthcare workers being redeployed if they refuse to take the vaccine.
Well, I think you'd need to discuss it with them in an appropriate way, to listen to what their fears or worries are, to try and understand why that is the issue.
Okay, we're assuming has happened.
I would still take the public health issue then would be the priority. But that doesn't take away from the fantastic work that... it's the wrong debate, really.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. It's the wrong debate.
Let's widen the debate out then too, because we heard today. Do we have the clip of Leo Varadkar talking about the great summer we're going to have? Yeah, or let's hear. This is Taoiseach Leo Varadkar talking about where we hopefully may be in July and August.
I'm hoping that that's the month when things are relatively normal again. That doesn't mean that everything will be the same, but the vast majority of restrictions you would hope to see gone by August of this year. You know, kids going back to school as normal in September, college happening on campus in September, October, all those things, and then a pretty normal Christmas in terms of seeing our friends and relations. But nobody can promise that.
So that was Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, not Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, as I had my slip of the tongue there, talking about what we might be doing. But which is all tantalising, really, that is maybe just a few months away from us. But is there, how do we feel about the idea of the vaccine passport in that scenario? That when we get to the point where everybody has been offered a vaccine and could avail of it, should there then be scenarios where if you wanted to go to an event, an indoor event, for instance, that you could be asked for your vaccine status at that point?
Well, it's very unforeseen, isn't it? We don't know what circumstances are going to be like, and it's very difficult to tell. I'm torn about it. I'm even torn about the idea of having to have a vaccine passport to travel. And there could be elements of discrimination in it. But I think we should take it one step at a time instead of predicting and having rigid rules in advance.
OK, Thomas.
Yeah, I think, there are certain people, maybe some disabled people or some people who have a medical condition, be able to take a vaccine anyway. So are we saying that those people should be discriminated against continuously? Because that's ultimately...
OK, if we leave that group of people aside, if we talk about people who have no medical reason for not taking a vaccine, who just decide, I'm not going to take a vaccine... I'm not talking about in terms of discriminating against them, but I'm saying, is there an argument?
That's what you're talking about. It might be a positive discrimination as far as the rest of the society is concerned, but it is a discrimination against those people.
But have we not conceded? If we go along with the EU green digital cert system, have we not conceded the principle there at that point then? We're saying that people who have vaccines,
I think
will have a different status to unvaccinated people.
Well, I don't think they should, because I don't think we should be setting that up as the way we're going to proceed in this country. I think we should be setting it up that everybody, we're going to do this together and do as much as we can together, and ensure that people can continue on and to live their lives as much as normal as possible. And the reality is that probably...
But if you're going to get on a plane, long haul, you're going to spend a few hours in a plane, is it not reasonable that you should need the confidence to know that everybody else on that plane...
If I've been vaccinated myself?
If you've been vaccinated, that everybody else on that plane has been vaccinated. You're going to be breathing the air they're exhaling.
But if I've been vaccinated, it doesn't matter to me.
Well, it does, actually.
Well, how can I get the disease if I've been vaccinated?
Well, I suppose you could get a variant of the disease.
Well, yeah, possibly. But then everybody should be vaccinated against the variant as well, then.
You know, you're taking that risk by travelling.
If I'm vaccinated, I don't have a risk. There's no risk to me.
I think the European Union stressed that if it were the fact that the vaccine passport had to be there, that, and if people weren't willing to go that road, that there would be PCR or other fast testing to make sure that they don't have active COVID, that they're negative. I think that rider is in the what document I read. But I think if I want to go and see my grandchildren, which I want to do, and we haven't seen them since last February in the UK, I'd be damn happy to take any vaccine passport to get to see them. But I'd want them, you know, I want everybody to travel safely. That's the most important thing.
Yeah. Alison, can I bring Alison O'Connor in?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, with some of the contributions there, I just find myself thinking we are in a pandemic. I mean, it would be nice if we could not make people feel that they're being forced into it. But there is public health at stake here. And I mean, I think we also need at a government level to get our act together on it, in terms of it won't just be to do with travel or healthcare workers. I mean, I could see a situation where people are ringing to book a hotel and wanting to know whether the staff have been vaccinated, or, you know, in a couple of months' time, wondering whether in a restaurant, a waitress, a beautician, a hairdresser. And I think it's a legitimate question. And I think with regard to what Thomas was saying there about flying, I mean, I think like in Israel is bringing in new regulations. They're banning travel to seven countries because of their fear about variants being imported back in. And that if you do travel back from one of those countries, you'd have to go into quarantine. So nothing is that simple. And as I said, in an ideal world, you know, nobody would have to do that. But this is far from ideal. And it's going to come up. It's the same with the issue of this green travel pass. We need to get ourselves sorted on that, in terms of travel within Europe, first of all, and then even travel from places like the United States, where there is a high level of vaccination. I know that the members of the Travel Agents Association appeared before in our ACTUS committee today, and they have a lot of concerns about our readiness. And even again, this same old story of which department exactly is going to be in charge of that, and the sense that it's yet another thing that's going to come down on top of the head of the Department of Health. Now, appreciating, you know, the government has an awful lot on its plate on COVID. But these are the issues that are really going to be right and centre over the next couple of weeks. And I think particularly that, if I was in hospital, I would want to know that the people who were treating me had a vaccine. Now, and I'm not, you know, I appreciate that there are lots of people out there who are COVID hesitant, and that there are, you know, there are good ways of talking to people about that and not making them feel that they're forced. But again, in this instance, it is to do with the greater good.
I honestly don't believe we can coerce people into it. I think the priorities of the government have to be on making sure
that it is coercion, though, if you say to people, look, if you want to go to Electric Picnic, you have to show us that you have, okay, you've been vaccinated.
Katie, I'm just trying to get a focus on this discussion. Mm-hmm. This is a pandemic, and there are hundreds of thousands of people as we speak dying in India from a very serious variant. And we still don't have patent-free vaccination across the globe. It's a big discussion. The US are talking about supporting, removing the TRIPS restrictions. I think that should be the focus of the government for now, is how do we get rid of a pandemic? Because it doesn't go away just because we keep the figures down here, but it's rampant in India. We're still all at risk. And there are a lot of Indian people, thankfully, who come and go and work in our health service. So we need to focus on actually crushing the virus on a global scale. And then let's think about, well, how do we manage the tiny minority who don't want to have a vaccine because they're paranoid about it, or they're anti-vaxxers. And I don't believe coercion is the way, but let's try and focus on what really matters. And what really matters at the moment is crushing the virus globally.
OK, Thomas.
Maybe I'm missing something in relation to this argument of that there, but I mean, if I'm vaccinated, I don't care whether you are or not. Is that, you know,
should. Well, we do need to get herd immunity. Well, no, but there is, you have to have a certain amount of people vaccinated.
But it doesn't make any difference. If I'm going abroad, what difference does it make whether I'm vaccinated or not, if I'm going to be prevented from going abroad anyway? You know, like, if I'm in hospital and I'm vaccinated, it doesn't matter to me whether you're vaccinated and you're my nurse or not, because I'm vaccinated. I'm not going to get sick.
Well, I think the issue is that we do need to have the critical mass of people.
What I'm saying is that it doesn't matter if 2 or 3% of people don't get vaccinated. Because
but is the issue not that as we go down the cohorts and the people know that there's very little risk to them in terms of what, you know, their exposure to COVID, that it's going to be more difficult to persuade people to accept the vaccine.
And
the surveys have shown that younger people, and particularly younger women, are going to be the most vaccine hesitant. That's the latest.
They're
service.
Worried about the type of vaccine they get because there's been proven serious blood clots with it. But in very rare cases. But I also believe that there's a tiny minority who are refusing the vaccination. I don't think it's at a level that should concern. And therefore, Thomas's point is correct. If the bulk of us are vaccinated, there's this tiny minority who aren't. Yeah. We shouldn't feel so.
The people that aren't vaccinated are at risk anyway because they're at risk of giving the illness to other people, maybe in their families.
According to everything they say, that even if I'm vaccinated, I'm at risk of giving the illness to everybody.
No, but I'm talking about the person who isn't vaccinated.
Yeah, but even the person who is vaccinated is at risk of giving the
Oh, you could be a carrier.
I'm vaccinated.
But the other issue for young people that they may not be considering is, you know, is the fact that you can get long COVID.
Indeed. It can affect your employment prospects.
Yeah. If you have COVID, what's going to happen? Yeah. Will you get health insurance? That's a big question.
Yeah.
That's a really big question.
We're coming up towards the hour. I just wanted to go to you about what you said in the Dáil earlier on, Thomas.
Yes.
Where you refer to this hotline that the Gardaí have set up to encourage people in Donegal to report breaches of COVID restrictions as a tout line or a rat line.
Yeah.
That's very provocative.
That's very provocative. And the reason it was provocative was to get a response, because in reality, this is not the move that we need to deal with COVID in Donegal. And setting up a hotline where people can inform on your neighbours and stuff like that there is not what we want.
But even using language like inform on your neighbours.
Well, that's what it is.
We'll
ring them up and tell them that your neighbours are having a party or whatever like that.
It's much bigger than that. It's placing lots of people at risk. That's the issue.
Yeah, but
We need
testing centres. We need I live 50 miles away from the testing centre. I would defy anybody else in the rest of the country to live more than 50 miles away from the nearest testing centre.
That is your nearest testing centre.
Yeah, but
and I live in Donegal, and I'm not further away either.
If people are breaking the rules,
it's
wrong to say that a Garda line is a rat line. That's actually inappropriate language.
Can we have one voice?
The government wasn't even going to put a testing centre in Donegal.
Well, I want to talk to you about what you said about people ringing the Gardaí because they're worried about their health and other people's health. You're calling them rats.
That is not a response that is needed at this time. The very first response that the state came out with in relation to COVID was to set up the call line.
How are the Gardaí to know? How are they to protect
because
you?
The Gardaí know everything that's going on in rural communities.
They don't. We didn't
have a hotline from the meat factories.
No.
When the outbreaks happened in direct provision centres in meat factories, on the construction sites. Look at what happened in one major construction site in Leixlip last week. There's been no hotline advocated for the employers.
But I do know that if the Gardaí are looking for assistance from the public, I wouldn't call people who ring them informers, nor would I call them.
Tommy didn't call them informers, he called the idea.
And that's not the response that we need in Donegal.
That is the very first thing that the state in relation to the Gardaí, and that's the point that I was making.
What we need is testing centres, we need a response in that way, and that will encourage people to
how many testing centres is there in Donegal as of now?
One, in Letterkenny.
Letterkenny is the only testing centre. So if you suspect you have COVID,
and we have
and you are up in the Inishowen Peninsula or down in...
I live 50 miles from Letterkenny. And I'm not the furthest part away from it. I live 60 miles from Sligo, which is the other testing centre. You know,
These new walk-in testing centres that are popping up.
That is
the
walk-in testing centre.
That's a walk-in one.
Yeah, well, there's a long walk from Killybegs.
Oh, Lord.
But so the new pop-up centres that have been popping up in places where there's high incidence, you haven't had those in Donegal? No. And have you been promising? You had that phone call with Tony Houlihan over the weekend.
Last Saturday. And Tony Houlihan and them said that they would go on to local radio on Tuesday to encourage people to do. They didn't. And we had it then.
And did you tell? Obviously, you must have discussed the low number of testing centres.
Oh, yeah. And I said that at the meeting, that like I live 50 miles from Letigenny, and that is a problem. Like, and our end of the county is actually very low, and lower than the national average of outbreak figures. But the reality is that people live huge distances away from Letigenny, and we had to fight to get the centre even in Letigenny in the county of Donegal. Okay. And that's the reality of the situation. So that's, and now we have the Gardaí doing the hotline, and the only place in the country is in Donegal. And that's the point that I was making today in relation to it.
Okay, fair enough. We will, I would say, be returning to this story again. But that's all we have time for tonight. The programme was produced by Brian Lally. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon, and Tommy O'Sullivan was on sound. And I want to thank listeners and thank all my panel for joining us this evening. And now it's over to Colm Murray on Late Date.